This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in to the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast, the official podcast of your New Orleans Pelicans, a podcast dedicated to everything you need to know about the squad. Hear from players, coaches, broadcasters, and those who cover the NBA on a daily basis. It's time to flock up. The New Orleans Pelicans Podcast starts right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast, the official podcast of your New Orleans Pelicans. When we last chatted with you, it was win or go home. The Pelicans won, beating Sacramento to get into the first round. Last night, that first round matchup against OKC got underway in game one. The Pelicans just came up a hair short of stealing that road victory. 94-92 was the final. Head coach Willie Green on the defeat.
A lot of positives throughout the course of the game. Like I said, our game plan discipline was at a high level. Our defense was extremely solid. And offensively, you know, we got quality looks, but we didn't knock them down. A couple key plays down the stretch. A couple turnovers that we wanted back. But other than that, you know, that's what you want. It's a game that comes down to the final few possessions.
It was 17-17 after the first quarter. Defense was really kind of the storyline of game number one, in particular the physicality of the Thunder. And Brandon Ingram afterwards was asked about that, and if you'll be ready to see that again on Wednesday.
Let them do it. We'll be ready. I'll be ready. Let them do it.
We bring in Jim Eichen off for now here. And look, next segment, we're going to talk with John DeShazer, who was on the call with the Graph, and get his take and vibe in there. It sounded loud on TV. It looked like it was very contentious. And look, it wasn't a situation where you saw like dirty plays or dirty fouls. It was just good quality 1997 Eastern Conference-style playoffs, as the Graph would say, too. What do you make of what you saw in Game 1 on Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, the first quarter, like you said, 17-all, that it was some Knicks heat from the glory days. Basketball, very physical, hard to generate offense. Kind of what you expect in the playoffs. I mean, I didn't expect it to be that level of defense first, and, you know, so difficult to score. But I mean, that was closer to what the traditional playoff feel of a game is than what we've seen in the regular season, where you're seeing teams, especially these days, get up to 120, 125 points regularly. I mean, OKC averages 120 points, so it's not out of the norm to see those kind of numbers. So, but I was a little bit shocked, to be honest with you, with just the style of play and just the way things went. But, I mean, in general, I think you can look at it like they're an 8 seed that was, you know, big underdogs. I don't really pay much attention to the lines and stuff like that, but I heard people saying that they were 9-point underdog.
Yeah.
So they were much more competitive than that, had every chance to win the game. But on the other hand, you only get so many chances to, quote unquote, steal a game on the road as an underdog, or especially an 8 seed. So definitely that's another way to look at things, that hopefully they'll have another or multiple chances to win in Oklahoma City. But Sunday was a golden opportunity. They just weren't able to close it.
We're going to break it down a lot more with JD here, specific things in the game, but just a quick kind of snapshot, you know, Cliff Notes version on this. Was the offensive output that OKC put on yesterday, was it more, hey, they hadn't played in the week, they were rusty? Or was it more of what the Pelicans did on the defensive end?
I mean, I'm going to lean towards what the Pelicans did defensively, especially with them being the sixth best defense in the league. And I also think they have some specific defenders that are helpful against what Oklahoma City has. I do think that New Orleans has more defensive personnel that can match up against SGA and Jalen Williams and some of their other wing scorers than a lot of teams in the league do. So I think that, I mean, I hope that that was the bigger part of it. We're going to see over the rest of the series whether that holding them to 94 points was an outlier or whether the Pelicans are going to be able to consistently do that. But I do think that they have the capability to play defensive games like that because of guys like Najee Marshall and obviously Herb Jones, first team all defense candidate, and even Dyson Daniels. They brought him in for a few minutes in the second half specifically to give them some defensive minutes against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
All right, well, let's bring in John DeShazer here, and we can break it down a little bit more. And then when we come back, we'll wrap things up by taking a look at the rest of the Western Conference playoff picture as everybody is off and running. Time to bring in color analyst John DeShazer. Oh, boy. All right. How should I feel? How should Pels fans feel this morning following game one?
I think they should feel somewhat encouraged. I do. I don't feel like there's any panic button to push. One, you know, it's a seven-game series, so there's a lot of basketball to be played. Two, they went on the road and played the number one team in the conference down to the wire with an opportunity to win the game in the last 2 minutes. Unfortunately, we understand what the Pelicans' clutch moments have been like this season. They have not been very good in clutch games. But to be in that position, you got to put yourself in that position, and sooner or later, hopefully, you'll break through and start winning those games. But I don't feel discouraged at all. You lost by two on the road against the number one team in the conference, and you played that team all the way down to the hilt with a chance to win the game on a three-pointer at the buzzer. So I don't feel bad at all. Not, I hope fans don't feel bad either.
JD, we talked right after the game about the different ways that you can kind of look at the end result of last night's game. I know there's also kind of a lot of discussion. This always happens when there's one team that starts a playoff series with a bunch of rest and one team that came right off of playing Friday night the way the Pelicans did. I mean, how much of that do you factor in? I mean, I feel like it's one of those things where, I mean, people could say, like, you know, Oklahoma City wasn't in top condition because they had a week of rest and they might have been rusty. But at the same time, to me, it's a challenge to have your season on the line Friday night against Sacramento, be able to pull off that win the next day, you know, basically like 12 hours later or something like that, you're on a plane headed to Oklahoma City and then you have to play a brand new opponent the next day. So, I mean, how much of that is a factor, or how much do you think that you can take that situation and say, okay, now we have 3 days to get ready for Wednesday's game two against the Thunder?
Yeah, I always feel like it's a disadvantage when you're playing a team that's rested. I understand, you know, it can go either way, but I always feel like it's a disadvantage. That team has had an opportunity to be off its feet, to be in peak physical condition. Now, they hadn't played games, but they hadn't had any injuries to accumulate either. Sure. They don't have any bumps and bruises to accumulate. So I always think the fresher team is at the advantage from the team that just had to turn around and play another game. And I think the Pelicans will certainly be better on Wednesday, as I think Oklahoma City will too. But I think the Pelicans will be better because they'll have those days of rest. They'll have those days to concentrate in and focus in on the opponent. And they understand exactly what it is Oklahoma City wants to do. I think the Pelicans got a real good feel for what the Thunder want to do, especially defensively in that game one. And I don't know how the officiating is going to be in game two, but certainly the physicality, you understand what's coming. You know exactly how they want to play. And so you know how to address that if you're the Pelicans.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times the narrative in terms of rust when a team has that many days off is kind of an after the fact. It's like, we'll wait till the result of the game happens, then we'll decide whether they were rusty or whether the rest was beneficial to them. You know, obviously if a team comes out and wins by 20-30 points the way a lot of the higher seeded teams did this weekend, you could say like, oh, well, you know, that was great for them that they benefited from that so much. You mentioned the, we don't know how the officiating is going to affect game two. How much of, I mean, for example, there's, I feel like there's so many situations with this game last night and going forward where you can look at it one way or the other. But I mean, how much of, for example, do you think how low scoring a game that was that you had two teams that are both top six in defensive efficiency, and how much of it was, you know, I thought we saw one of the best examples I've ever seen in the entire time I've been here in terms of the officiating was just different. It was just a different interpretation of the way physicality is going to be allowed defensively.
I think it was a lot of both of those. I think you had, you mentioned it. You've got two teams that are really good defensively, but I thought the officials let a lot of stuff go that could have been called, that could have had teams on the free throw line. And it went both ways. I mean, both teams were allowed to be physical. I thought Brandon Ingram, you know, maybe should have filed a police report after the game because he really got pushed around and grabbed and held and beat up pretty good. But this is the playoffs. And you know, traditionally in the playoffs, these are the things that have been allowed to happen. Now, we've gotten a different NBA now, and so a lot of that stuff doesn't go. So, again, it'll be interesting to see how the officials, how this new crew calls the next game, because you won't have the same officiating crew. And so this next crew might call it a lot tighter. And if they call it a lot tighter, I think that will be to the Pelicans' advantage because, again, Brandon Ingram was handled, you know, he was handled not with care in game one. And so, you know, he could benefit from a little bit more of a friendly whistle. And maybe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Oklahoma City might feel the same way. So we'll see how the officiating affects it, because I don't think it will be the same. I certainly don't think the amount and the level of physicality that was allowed will be the same, because if that level of physicality is allowed in this series, something's going to jump off. Somebody's going to get ticked off because there was a lot of contact that wasn't called. And sooner or later, when you see a guy, familiarity breeds contempt. These guys are going to see each other enough to be sick of each other, and they're going to be sick of being held. They're going to be sick of being grabbed. Mm-hmm. They're going to be sick of being fouled and the fouls not being called. So I think the officials probably need to rein it in a little bit, because it's going to get chippy, and it's going to get chippy fast.
You know, JD, we listened to your guys' radio call last night, and because I'm a glutton for punishment, I went back this morning and watched the end of the TV broadcast as well. And I noticed when, you know, you mentioned B.I. and his possible filing of a police report, when the play happened where B.I. was called for an offensive foul and against Lou Dort, that was the play that just made me kind of scratch my head and just say, like, I can't believe this is happening after the way this game has been officiated. But Joel and AD both just kind of lost it momentarily as well. So that was just really tough to watch. You know, on the same subject though, the Pelicans shot at least 10 free throws in every game during the regular season, and last night they had 9 free throws. How much of that do you think was defense? How much of it was officiating? How much of it was them not being aggressive enough? Like, it seemed like sometimes maybe settling for mid-range instead of trying to go all the way to the basket.
A combination of all of it. But I think a lot of it. And I'm not a person who generally talks about officiating this much, and I hate to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
But a lot of it was that. I mean, a lot of it was things were allowed that clearly were fouls, and the Pelicans should shoot 9 free throws in a game where a team is that physical. Come on, that's laughable.
Right.
That shouldn't happen. That is absurd, and that's something that even, you know, I know the league doesn't, you know, the league should look at those officials and say, hey, man, you guys got to be better than this, because I thought it was a disservice, especially to the road team. And a lot of times the more aggressive home team will get the benefit of the doubt, but there was a lot of doubt that they got the benefit of in that game in Oklahoma City. And I just thought the Pelicans really did not benefit much from a whistle. And Willie Green said, you know, I think after the Laker game when Zion got hurt, this team has not got the very friendly whistle this season. But I thought particularly on Sunday, it was really glaring to shoot 9 free throws as physical. I mean, Oklahoma City started the game basically Lou Dort climbing inside of Brandon Ingram's jersey all over him. And it was like, at some point, you just feel like the officials are going to call some of this and kind of get him off him, because it's supposed to be a free-flowing game, isn't it? It's
right.
Supposed to be a game. It's supposed to be a game where they like offense. It's supposed to be a game where you're supposed to be allowed some freedom of movement, and that restriction was there. It was present because Oklahoma City did a whole lot more than just move their feet very well. So it'll be interesting to see how the officials call game two, because I just don't think I don't think that kind of swallowed whistle can be present this entire series. It's just not good for the series for either team, I don't think.
You know, JD, I'm with you in terms of not dwelling on the officiating, because you kind of have to focus on the things that you can control. And I'm sure, even though there were things that bothered the Pelicans and the Thunder about the way that game was officiated, it's about the next 72 hours are about, okay, what are some of the things that we can do differently? What are some of the things that we can control? But with all that said, there was a play where Jonas grabbed a rebound in the middle of the lane and had the ball. There was like three Thunder guys around him, and Jalen Williams kind of like grabbed his arm, grabbed his shoulder, kind of pulled on him. And it kind of reminded me of like when a dad goes to a park and he's got like three little kids, and they all just kind of jump on him at the same time and climb on him.
Yeah. So by the way, was a foul called on that play?
It was a jump ball, Gus.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Imagine that.
But, you know, and I sit here and I say, you know, could they have been more, could the Pelicans have been more aggressive going to the basket? Could they have not settled for mid-range shots? Could they have gone all the way to the rim? But I think a lot of times when they tried to do that, there was a hip check or a little chuck or a bump too. So, I mean, it's easy for me to sit here in a nice air-conditioned office and say, yeah, you know, just go all the way to the basket. But I do think that they were redirected. And like you said, that also applied to both teams. I mean, there was definitely more physicality allowed than what we've seen pretty much every game the entire season.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where you got to learn to play through it. I mean, because complaining about it, you know, during the game or after doesn't do you a whole lot of good. So you got to be able to play through it. And the Pelicans have to be able to execute in those situations. I know that we lost it when Lu Dort drew that offensive foul, because it was like the amount of physicality that's been allowed in this game, for that to be a call in this game, just doesn't fit. And that's the inconsistency that drives players and coaches and fans and broadcasters, whoever. It drives you nuts, because it's like that hasn't been a call this entire game. And now when it's really critical, that becomes a call in this game. That's the kind of thing that really drives you nuts. But you want to see the Pelicans also execute offensively in the crucible of the game, in the stretch run, because you know what's coming. And the Pelicans, even with the dissatisfaction with the officiating, the game's right there to be had if you can just get a shot to go down. And some of those looks were pretty decent. A couple of them looked like they were kind of rushed, but you want to be able to get the shot that you want. And I think a lot of the shots that they could have gotten or might have wanted a little bit better would have been at the rim, Jim. I thought they had some opportunity to drive it all the way and get there. And I understand Chet Holmgren's in the background and he had five blocks, but that's why you have Jonas Valanciunas. You can drop it off to him, and you can get some profit there if you can drive to the basket and force the issue that way. And I thought the Pelicans, hopefully they'll do a better job of that in game two, because look, 18 of 43 in the paint, 18 of 43. That's not what this team is. Now, I understand a lot of that production comes from Zion Williamson. I get that. But 18 of 43, that kind of efficiency has to rise. You can't have that kind of inefficiency in the paint and beat a great team like Oklahoma City on the road. You've got to be able to take advantage of those opportunities. And having 43 shots in the paint, I mean, that's a ton of shots, and that's a ton of opportunities, and you got to be able to convert those. And maybe it probably looks a little bit better if you convert some of those, and you might not have to drive as much, but you got to get those offensive rebounds and putbacks. You got to get those floaters to go. You got to continue to attack, and hopefully the Pelicans will attack even more in game two, because again, Oklahoma City's playing them so tight on the perimeter that you're not going to be able to get the jumpers that you want. We've seen that from CJ McCollum for the last couple of games now, where teams have just been smothering him on the perimeter, saying, we're not going to give you open looks from three. If you get a look from three, it's going to be something that you basically have to force up. And Trey Murphy's been the guy who's kind of been able to pop out, but a lot of what Trey Murphy got, offensively in terms of three-pointers last night was offensive rebounds and kicking back out, and there's Trey. So, you know, you can work this team. Yeah, you can work Oklahoma City on the offensive glass. But, again, as you mentioned, I do think you have to drive a little bit more. You got to be a little bit more forceful in terms of going to the basket.
I was going to use the analogy, Jim and JD, since it is NFL draft week. Football is a three-point shot sort of like the bomb, right? The pretty deep ball and things of that nature. And is that the paint game, as you were saying, the driving dish or just going to the basket, kind of like the run game, JD, like where if you're playing a team and they're going to play too deep or the cover zone and not let you get past 20 yards, attack the middle, screen pass, things of that nature? Because that's kind of how I felt looking at that game yesterday. If teams are going to keep CJ and Trey from getting that rhythm from the arc, just attack the paint. And even Willie said after the game that JV is a mismatch for them, and I know it's not just him, but should the Pels concentrate on using the paint more?
Yeah, because, I mean, because you can play inside out. You can give it to Jonas Valanciunas. We saw last.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Tonight, when Valanciunas has the ball, Oklahoma City has to double-team him. Chet Holmgren is listed at 208 pounds. I think JV is listed around 260 or so. But Chet Holmgren cannot physically keep Jonas Valanciunas away from getting to whatever spot he wants to get to in the post, which is why they started sending the double-team. And if they got to send the double-team, JV's going to make the right basketball play the majority of the time, and he's going to find the open teammate. Now, when he finds the open teammate, you got to make him right. You got to make the shot because those are the open looks that you get. So that's going to be Herb Jones, and that's generally, you know, maybe Najee Marshall and Jose Alvarado. You know, those are the guys who Oklahoma City had said, okay, we're going to rotate off of that guy, and we're going to leave him open, and he's going to have to beat us. And so those guys are going to have to be a little bit more efficient. And generally, role players are more productive at home, but the Pelicans' role players have been more productive on the road. That's why the Pelicans had the best road record in the league during the regular season, because their role guys have been efficient on the road. Those guys are going to have to be efficient against Oklahoma City, because those are the guys that are going to get the looks when the Jonas Valanciunas draws that double team. But you can absolutely play through Valanciunas on the block. If they don't double team him, Oklahoma City does not have anyone who can guard him. And let me repeat that. OKC has no one who can guard Jonas Valanciunas, which is why he is such a mismatch. So you can play through him, and sometimes he might have to force up a shot over a double team, or he's going to have to move a little bit faster before the rotation gets there. But you can certainly play through him. He's generally going to make the right play. Now, he's got to make some of those bunnies that he's missing, but he's going to be a guy that you can go to time and time again who can punish them because they can't guard him.
You know, JD, you mentioned the struggles of making shots in the paint, but I feel like probably as costly was the 3-point shooting was obviously a struggle last night. Do you kind of look at that as like going into game two, you expect them to shoot better on some of those looks? I mean, I thought part of what happened last night of why teams were both teams kind of swayed a little bit more towards the 3-point shot was because based on how the game was called, a lot of times those were the shots that were available. Those were the ones that you could get. But I mean, you kind of have to look at it like, I mean, you're going to have to make more threes. They were 11 for 39. The Pelicans, they shot 28% from 3-point range. You're going to just have to be able to make more of those jumpers in game two to be able to win. And obviously just to be able to score more points, because as much as we look at playoff games, sometimes do get more low scoring and it's harder to generate offense. I mean, you can't go on into a game in 2024 and say 92 points is going to be enough for us to get a win.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to make more threes, because that's the best way to open up the drive lanes if you can make some more threes. You know, but again, Herb Jones, 2-for-8 from three. Jose Alvarado, 1-for-4. Najee Marshall, 1-for-4. Brandon Ingram, 0-for-2. So you've got to have that help, because Trey Murphy, yeah, he's 5-for-12. Mm-hmm. But even then, I mean, he was hounded in the half court. Again, he got his good looks off the scrambles. And they ran some two-man game up top with him and CJ, or him and Brandon Ingram. And so you're able to get him maybe a look that way, because Oklahoma City is one of these teams in the NBA that can switch everything. They've got big enough guys, you know, whether it's Josh Giddey or whether it's, you know, Jalen Williams, or whether it's whoever, if Lou Dort, you can switch everything if you're Oklahoma City and you don't really have to give up that three. You can smother a guy at the 3-point line. But the Pels are going to have to be able to get some of those guys free, and whether that's a little bit more fluid offensively, because I think you can get some guys free with some screens, whether it's double screens. You can get them in some advantageous situations where hopefully you're not taking as many contested threes, because CJ McCollum, 2-for-9 from three, and the majority of them were contested. The few times he got some free ones, it looked like he shot it kind of quick, because he was so unaccustomed to being free, and it didn't even look good coming out of his hand almost, because he was like, oh, my God, I'm free. I got to shoot it. Whereas, you know, if you can get into the offense and get him into a better rhythm and get a better look, maybe he'll be a little bit more successful on those.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I'll say this. I've heard you say throughout the season, John, you always say after a tough loss, this team seems to battle back. Look, maybe this is one of those good things, too, because of the energy that they had to put out yesterday on the defensive side. You have 2 days off here. You know, it's not like you have to play on Tuesday. You don't play again till Wednesday. You got some time to kind of recoup. So I actually expect to probably see a very similar game on Wednesday than I did last night. Huh, guys?
Yeah, I think they're gonna play better. And again, I think Oklahoma City will, too. But I think the Pelicans have a matchup that it's favorable to them. If the 8 seed can have a favorable matchup, I think that's a favorable matchup for them, Oklahoma City, because, you know, and it's not just, you know, because OKC is a young team and there's no playoff experience there. It's because I think physically they match up well. Look, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wound up with 28 points, but I don't think you can guard him better than Herb Jones did several times for the vast majority of that game. He was 11 of 24 from the field. Herb Jones stays in front of him. Herb Jones is a lengthy defender. Herb Jones stays down. He doesn't go for those pump fakes. Herb Jones is in his pocket all the time. And I think that is something that bothers Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, even though he winds up with 28 points. But I think making it difficult for him, and that's what Willie Green was saying pregame, he's probably going to get his, but you got to make it tough on him. And I think Herb Jones makes it as tough on him as anybody in the league does. So I think the Pels will play better offensively. I think the defense will still be there. Now, the score will probably go up in the game. I don't think 94-92 is going to be the final.
Yeah.
Because I think the offensive efficiency for both teams is going to go up. But, man, I think the Pelicans have what it takes to be able to beat this team on the road and hopefully in the Smoothie King Center too, because it just seems to be a pretty nice matchup. Every now and again, you know, Oklahoma City might jump up and, you know, Josh Giddey might throw a 25 spot on you at home as he did against the Pelicans. But he was a non-factor in that game last night. And so it basically was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and it was Jalen Williams who did the majority of the work. And you had a little bit from Chet Holmgren also. I think the Pels just match up well with this team. And I think they'll match up well with him this entire series. That's why, you know, I'm encouraged because, you're down 1-0. And now for them, it's, you know, the first, you know, if they can win three quick ones, they can get out of the series. But the Pelicans have what it takes, I think, to be able to stay with this team and make this a really long, interesting series. And so I'm never going to jump to conclusions after the first game of the series because, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Memorial Day Massacre, you know, the Boston Celtics against the Lakers where Boston beat the Lakers by like 34 or something in the Garden in game one, and everybody gave up the Lakers for dead, and the Lakers come back and win the series to win the finals. Those kinds of things can happen in a series where you jump out to a conclusion early, and this one was too close to draw any conclusions from that game one. The only conclusion you can draw to me is that these are pretty evenly matched teams, and you might get a lopsided game out of it somewhere in here, but these are two really evenly matched teams right now.
I agree, JD. You know, it's interesting and kind of funny to think about that in the days before the playoffs started, especially when people looked at the Western Conference, you said these are eight really good teams. I mean, people didn't know whether it was going to be the Kings or the Pelicans, obviously, until Friday night. But people thought no matter who's there, it's going to be a four really good series. It's going to be a lot of epic games, a lot of amazingly close finishes. But yet on the weekend, the Pelicans Thunder was really the one game that was close. The other ones were pretty one-sided. So in some ways, I feel like the Pelicans Thunder kind of saved the weekend in terms of people that wanted to see dramatic basketball and wanted to see, you know, really high competition. Obviously, it didn't go the Pelicans' way, but I mean, that to me, that was much more of a good sign in terms of, like you said, the matchup and how close these teams could be in this series. But it also, like you said, too, I mean, in some of the other series in the West, I'm so interested to see how game two goes because you had, for example, Minnesota beating Phoenix by 25 in game one, and some of these teams that lost game one will now have a chance to answer in game two, and that obviously includes the Pelicans. So we'll see what happens on Wednesday. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of time to break things down, but I didn't watch every other playoff game this weekend, but of the ones I watched, it was by far the best game and the most entertaining.
Yeah, and the good thing for the Pelicans is, you know, even during the game, they showed, we talked about their fortitude after they lose games and bounce back. They showed a lot of fortitude in that game because there were a couple of times in that game where it could have gotten away. And, you know, at one point it was 82-72, and the Pelicans looked like it was slipping away.
Right.
And the next thing you know, they jump right back into that game and really put on a push down the stretch to where they put all the pressure on OKC and almost won that game. So this is a team that, you know, has fortitude within the game. So hopefully that fortitude will show up for game two.
John DeShazer, radio analyst and color analyst for your New Orleans Pelicans. As always, man, appreciate it. Have some fun the next couple of days, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Hey, thank you, guys. We're going to live it up here in Oklahoma City once we find something to do, I think.
I hear that. Thank you, sir.
I'll
appreciate it.
I'll give you some tips later. I lived in Oklahoma for those 2 years.
Oh, so really?
We'll see if I can come up with something for you.
Coming up on the next podcast, Living It Wild in Oklahoma City with Eichenhofer. All right, JD, we'll see you
soon.
Thanks,
JD.
All right, thanks to John DeShazer there. We'll hear from him again on Wednesday on the broadcast, along with John, with Todd Graffinini, of course. But one of the things that I also want to look at, Jim, here is the rest of the playoffs that come in. It was so funny, we joked about it, right? Friday, the Western Conference Finals was set to start in Denver on Saturday. Now it's over. Now the series is over. It's 1-0. It's 1-0 Denver.
Yeah.
But the series is over. And look, they, I wouldn't say the league did everything humanly possible, but the Nuggets had 6 free throws in that entire game at home, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it. That said, they did win the game. Game two is tonight. Let's start with that series since it is the most important series in the Western Conference. I didn't know if you knew that.
I guess I don't feel as bad about the Pelicans getting 9 free throws when I go back and think that the Nuggets only got 6. So maybe 9 was a lot, I guess, this weekend.
Pretty incredible how that
compared
works.
To that. But no, you're right. It's funny because, you know, you say after game one, that series is over. I honestly think a lot of people thought, based on the recent history between the Lakers and Nuggets, that series was over even before it started. So if you're not a Lakers backer, like, I guess I would put myself in that camp. I mean, that I hope that's true, that series is never going to actually start because the Nuggets have rolled them so many consecutive times. But, you know, the way that game started, actually, I think was a good sign for the Lakers that they were able to get out to a pretty good lead. But the fact that they couldn't sustain it, and it kind of felt inevitable. I don't know if that's because of, like I said, how well Denver's done against them. But as Denver kind of took control in the second half, it just felt like, oh boy, this is looking like a definite Nuggets win, and there's not much the Lakers can do about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So how do you see the rest of the series going? They've won 9 straight games against the Lakers.
I think tonight is it. I think if Denver wins tonight, in terms of, let me explain. If Denver wins, I think it's it. I think the Lakers, this is the Lakers' last chance to say we can get back in this series. I mean, because if they go back to L.A. down 2-0, I mean, that's going to be a tough chore. And if there's going to be several days of them being reminded of how many consecutive games they've lost to Denver. The problem isn't that the Lakers, I think, can't hang with them for 40 minutes. It's that the last 5 minutes of every time they've played them is a disaster because Denver's the best executing team in the NBA.
Yeah, execution late games. That's kind of a sort subject here, Jim. Thank you for bringing that up there. I mean, but that's the point, though, right? I mean, that's why you win championships or you win playoff games. You have to be able to execute
that's
later
what
on.
That separates you a lot of times.
Dallas and the Clippers. What did you take out of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, obviously, the Pelicans Thunder series is only one game in, but I thought for a second last night that we were going to look up on the graphic today and it said on one half of the bracket, Clippers 1-0, Pelicans 1-0. So, I mean, I'm keeping an eye on that series for the possibility that if you win, you're going to be playing one of those two teams. I was very surprised at how poorly the Mavericks played yesterday, especially in the first half. They were one of the best, maybe the best team in the league over the last, say, 10, 15 games of the regular season. They were just on fire. But yesterday, they couldn't make a shot, and they're down 20-something. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion going into the playoffs about how are the Bucks going to do without Giannis? How are the Clippers going to do without Kawhi? How are the Pelicans going to do without Zion? If you think about it, two of those three teams won and were impressive, and then the Pelicans had a shot to win at the buzzer. So the one player out is going to destroy this team's chances. Didn't hold up very well in game one.
Yeah, it is interesting, but it also goes to show you something else that I can bring up here towards the end, because the T-Wolves and Suns also got going, and it was Minnesota winning 129-95. Anthony Edwards had 33. Durant had 31. What did you take out of that game?
Yeah, I mean, that was not a good sign for Phoenix in terms of it just seemed like they were disjointed, and they've been that way for a lot of the season. You know, we talked about when the Pelicans played the Suns that the Suns looked like a 65-win team in a couple of games played against New Orleans, but the vast majority of the rest of the season, I've seen a lot of problems with them just having no flow on offense. They have a lot of duplication of they have guys that are all trying to score from the same area of the floor. But if they have problems like that offensively against Minnesota, who's one of the best, maybe the best defensive team in the league, I think the Timberwolves are going to have a really good chance to go on and maybe win that series in, you know, maybe in 5 or 6 games.
I don't know if you heard me saying it yesterday while we were watching the game, but the NBA released the 3 finalists for the awards this year, right?
Right.
And the one thing that stood out, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that on Wednesday. We have some time going into it. But the thing that stood out to me, we're talking clutch player of the year, offensive player of the year, most improved player, most valuable player, rookie of the year, sixth man of the year, and coach of the year, and then the defensive player. In every category that I just said, all but one, 2 of the 3 finalists come from the Western Conference. It literally goes back to what we were saying. I understand they're back in the play-in last week. I don't think people really understand until maybe we look back at the season, at the end of the season, just how difficult the Western Conference was. When Steph Curry and SGA are the clutch players of the year, along with DeMar DeRozan, that's 2 or 3, right? Mm-hmm. Defensive player of the year, Bam Adebayo, Rudy Gobert, Wembanyama, 2 of the Western Conference, right? Most improved, Tyrese Maxey, Senegun, and Kobe White. Okay, that's the only category were 2
there was more
Eastern
guys.
That's
wow.
It. Everything else. Most valuable player. Luka, SGA, Jokic.
That's
all
a sweep.
Three that are somebody that's going to win the MVP is going to come out of the Western Conference. That's A. Rookie of the year, Holmgren, Brandon Miller of the Hornets, Victor Wembanyama of the Spurs. Sixth man of the year, Malik Monk, Bobby Portis Jr., Naz Reid. Reed's with the T-Wolves. Malik Monk is with the Kings. Coach of the year,
You have the Thunder head coach. You have Coach Finch of the T-Wolves. And then Mosley of the Magic. Two of the three. You know what? I mean, it's right there.
I mean, I guess the best way I could kind of sum this up is it's in a way it's really not surprising if you look at the dominance of the West over the East this year. And I mean, here's the bottom line. 49 wins in the West got the Pelicans a play-in spot and ultimately the 8 seed. In the East, the Cavs won, I think it was 48 games. They have home court advantage in the first round and playing against a really young Orlando team. So I think the reward for that a high 40s win was significantly greater in the Eastern Conference than it was in the West.
But I mean, that crazy. I mean, they're your finalists. Those are your finalists right there. And if every category but one, two Western Conference players or two Western Conference coaches are up for the award, maybe that ought to tell you how difficult it is.
For sure. And it is kind of funny to think, too, that the one category that they did get two out of three was really a category that congratulates you and pats you on the back for being better than you were the year before. So even that isn't really...
Kobe White was like, what, the second pick overall, right?
Yeah, he was a lottery pick, yeah.
I mean, I'll give it to Sengun.
The ultimate goal is to accomplish things. It's not to get better, not to improve
from where you were before. Tyrese Maxey is considered a max player, second best player for the 76ers here. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, so... Look, we wanted to kind of go into a little bit more, but that was the point kind of what you were just talking about when we went through the playoff picture. How about on Wednesday, though? We take those categories and we'll have a little fun for maybe one of those segments.
Sure.
And what Pels player would you put in each of those categories? Like clutch player of the year, defensive player? Well, we know it'd be Herb. Most improved, most valuable, rookie, if we can do that, or maybe a young player. Six man, and you know, of the coaching staff, you know, along with coach and stuff, like what coach do you think this year really made an impact in helping, or is it just the Fred Vincent Award, right? I mean, because that's how it worked there. But I think it'd be kind of fun for Pels fans to maybe look at it from that perspective, from its team, from that standpoint. Jim, I can offer, Jim_I can offer, it's the way to give a follow over on Pelicans.com. And of course, right here on the podcast, thank you to John DeShazer. We'll see you again on Wednesday, game two of the Pels and Thunder. Don't forget, Lucy's, an official Pelicans watch party, will be there to watch the game. See you then, folks.
Thanks for listening to the New Orleans Pelicans podcast. Join us three times per week on Pelicans.com, the Pelicans mobile app, the iHeartRadio app, or where you get your podcasts. And be sure to give Jim and Gus a follow on X at Jim_Eichenhofer and GCAT_17. We'll see you next time, right here on the New Orleans Pelicans podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.